Prayer. God,
grant me strength to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
All right. Tarek, alcoholic.
Hey, Tarek.
I was talking to a friend of mine outside. One of the things I love about doing these is like we'll have conversations in between the sessions, and it'll be inspiration for the next session. And so Mike and I were talking outside, and we were talking about how you can be so right that you can be wrong. This need to be right has the power to kill. You know, it's one of my greatest handicaps today. And especially when we talk about this thing called service work. And it took on. And before I forget, I want to give Chris and Steve here a round of applause for this thing together. This is important, man. It takes a lot to put on a weekend like this. A lot of people show up, they have a good time, and they go home. It took a lot of effort and commitment to put this on. And I know what that's like firsthand, and I know how much goes into it. It's awesome, man. Thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of it. Yeah, that's a service that we're offering here. It's an important part of what we do. I believe also that the greatest service that we can ever be a part of is being involved in the spiritual awakening of another person. And so Mike and I were talking, and there have been so many times that I've met a newcomer with my mind instead of my heart, because I want to show them how right I am about how they're doing it wrong. If they would only do as I said, right? One of the things that we were talking about was when I'm coming at things with my mind and I'm not able to meet a new person where they're at, I have forgotten from where it is I come from. I have forgotten that hell that I walk through. I'm disrespecting my own experience with drugs and alcohol if I cannot bring my heart to the game. And this whole spiritual awakening, why are we going to take the actions to seek a spiritual awakening? And I swear to you, one of the best descriptions I've ever seen is in the 12 and 12. And I want to read it real quick, and I want to talk about it for a little bit as it relates to my experience. And this is the last page of step one. Why all this insistence that every person in one of these 12-step fellowships, like Alcoholics Anonymous, must hit bottom first? The answer is that few people will sincerely, with their heart present, try to practice the AA program unless they have hit bottom. For practicing AA's remaining 11 steps means the adoption of attitudes and actions that almost no addict or alcoholic who is still drinking or using can dream of taking. Who wishes to be rigorously honest and tolerant? Who wants to confess their faults to another and make restitution for harm done? Who cares anything about a higher power, let alone meditation and prayer? Who wants to sacrifice time and energy in trying to carry AA's message to the next sufferer? No, the average alcoholic, self-centered in the extreme, doesn't care for this prospect unless he has to do these things in order to stay alive himself. And so the question is, it's a life and death question. And, I was sitting at a big book study at Dante's house, but I do want to talk about the three sponsors I've had in my 18 years. Dante was my first 2 years. Then I had a man named Scott for 8 years. And I had Ralph. Ralph is my current sponsor for the last 8 years. And, I'm sitting at Dante's house at a big book study, and we're on page 24 of the big book. And this paragraph is etched in my mind, right? He People say, oh, you sound so cool, you can quote the big book. It's just really eloquent, and I like it. I can't say it better than the big book. But it says, for reasons yet obscure, like we don't understand, you know, the addict alcoholic has lost the power of choice in drink. This so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. And it says, at certain times, the alcoholic and the addict cannot bring into their consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the pain and humiliation of a week ago, a month ago, and with really hard drugs like cocaine and meth and heroin a few hours ago. Right? We're without defense against the first drink or drug. And I'm sitting at this big book study, and Dante asked us, he said, what do you guys think are the most important words in that paragraph on page 24? And, you know, people rattled off a bunch of different answers, but nobody rattled off the right answer. And he said, at certain times, it's those three words are the most important words. Because we sit in here, at least I did. I sat in these meetings, and I thought I knew what the day looked like. That I knew what set of circumstances would have to transpire for me to take a drink. But I had forgotten this whole thing about the strange mental blank spot of how many times I just took a drink because somebody asked. There was no like set of circumstances. And so I had to really start examining my experience. And so it talks in that paragraph that I just read about, you know, why am I going to take the rest of these action steps if I have not hit the bottom, which to me is like experience the surrender that I can't willfully bring about on my own. I cannot surrender. I think I would have done it before the bankruptcy, before I lost the house, before the incarceration, before I torched every meaningful relationship in my life. I think I knew I was headed towards a brick wall. I just could not stop. Everything in me wanted to stop before it got that bad, and I couldn't. And so I started thinking back over my experience about these certain times. And I remember asking Dante, you know, well, how do you protect yourself from certain times? And he said, you got to have a psychic change. You got to have the personality change, you know, the higher power. That's it. You know, the freest I'll ever be is when I'm totally dependent on God. Isn't that like sound weird? The freest I will ever be is when I'm totally dependent on God. Because when I'm not dependent on God, I am a slave to my character defects, plain and simple. One of which is my need to be right, my need to be important, my need to get the last word in. And I started thinking, and this is how this power of choice, right? We lose power, choice, and control. We lose all three. We never get them back. You know, the book talks about like we're like a man who's lost his leg. He's never going to grow a new one. You know, we're done. I'm probably speaking to our newer friends more so than anybody else. But I remember, like, being on, like, a let's say you go, anybody, how many people could go to work and smoke crack all night or get high all night? You still could, for years, for a few years, you could manage to get to work. I see my people right there. Right. We managed it. So I don't know if this is going to sound familiar, but I used to have these nights where, you know, about 5 a.m, I had been smoking like a champ. And so I am now chain smoking cigarettes and I take a Xanax bar because I got to get to work, right? I've missed too many days. I'm running out of PTO. I had this job. I did manage to get this pretty good job one time. I was an analyst and I had a corner office. I was a benefit analyst. I did retirement planning for bank executives. Had a little putting green in my office. Had a nice view. I really had arrived, right? I thought the job was going to fix my problems. And so I'm tweaking hard. I take the Xanax bar. I take a shower. I get dressed to go to work. I pull into the parking garage. I hit the elevator button. I got to get to the third floor. But there's the worst part was like walking by the receptionist. Because again, remember, I'm a bug-eyed tweaker, right? You know that there's something wrong with me, right? When you lay your eyes on me, you just know. And so I'm getting off the elevator. I'm just looking at the ground. I want to walk to my office, get down the hallway, and so I can put Do Not Disturb on my phone in my office and close the door. Because I usually stop tweaking around like 9:30, 10 o'clock. I can like open the door and I can start to function, right? And so around like 11, right, one of the guys down on the block is going to send me a text. And he says, I got something for you, right? And so the next thing that goes on in this mind is I start imagining taking a rip off that stem. start to like really see the 20 rock on the end of the stem. And I go through this intellectual sorting out process. Isn't that what making a choice is? Making a choice is like, I've got a choice of this, and I got a choice of this, and I got a choice of this. I'm examining my options. I don't like this one. I reject. I choose this one. I choose this one, right? That's what making a choice is, guys. For a lot of alcoholics and addicts, they understand the allergy. They understand that once I start, I can't stop, because it's really easy to see that one. This other one, that I don't have a choice before I pick it up. Because how many people, sponsors in here, have had a guy come back from a relapse and say, hey, I just wanted to get high more and I wanted to stay sober? I've heard people say that. And I have to tell them, well, you haven't really understood what alcoholism and drug addiction are then. You know, you don't see it. And so I go through this intellectual sorting out process, right? I get the text from the guy down on the block. What goes on in my mind? I spent too much money last night. I still owe my roommate money from last month's bills, right? I got mom's birthday coming up, man. I can't be spending any more money, right? I've been up for 2 days. I just don't need to do it again, right? I choose. I'm not getting high today. Boom, I turn back to the computer. I'm typing. And then it slows down. And I start thinking about it again, right? Thinking about the night before, right? Thinking about the blast. No, I'm not doing it. I choose. No, I'm not. I am not going to get high. Go back to working, right? Then he sends me another text, right? This is like 2 p.m, and this goes back and forth time after time, every 45 minutes. Anybody familiar with this experience I'm talking about? Okay, I see a lot of heads nodding. 5 o'clock comes, and I've made it, right? I'm about to go home. I'm about to pop my, you know, maybe pop a beer and smoke a bowl and just chill out, not do anything crazy that night. And I take the elevator down to the parking garage. I've had access to my willpower all day long, right? Because something with new people, they think when we tell them they don't have a choice, it's like they don't have a choice all the time. No, no, no. It says at certain times. Remember those three important words. And so I pull out of the parking garage and I go down the hill to exit the office park, and I'm at the proverbial red light. If I go straight, I go home. I turn left, I go downtown. The same intellectual sorting out process I had access to all day long is suspended. I don't go through examining options. I just go downtown. It called and I went. And there's nothing you can do to protect yourself from that at certain times. The only thing is, and I can't tell you how it works. I can tell you it does work, is a relationship with a power greater than yourself. That's what does it. That's what provides the safety and the protection. And so when I think of that paragraph about hitting bottom and why am I willing to take these steps, it's because I know, left to my own devices, I'm going back to the red light one day. My first step says I am going to drink again. It says that I'm going to get high again. And so that's why I think I go after this the way I do. So let's circle back now to what Mike and I were talking about, like not being able to meet a newcomer where they're at, and like this need to be right. And so much of this to do with like what it is to be tethered to your higher power. My sponsor and I have been having these conversations. On Thursday night, my sponsor does a meeting with all of his sponsees on Zoom. And we've been going through Chuck C's new pair of glasses, just like a big book study, line by line. And there's a section in it where he's talking about, you know how Bill Wilson capitalizes words in the big book that imply higher power, right? So Chuck C does the same thing in his book, and he capitalizes the big hurt. Right, and he's talking about the big hurt. So I took some notes. It says the big hurt, and I'm going to talk about what the big hurt is. The big hurt is not external. We always think it's like circumstances, right? We think like the valleys in our lives. Peaks and valleys is when shit goes sideways. Someone we care about dies. Someone we care about gets sick. We lose a job. We find out we're sick. Something like that happens. That's the big hurt, right? I thought so. The big hurt is actually being untethered from power. When Tarek is untethered, Tarek is like an open wound, and life is salt. I think doing the things in the steps to stay comfortable, because I think they're giving me power, but what is actually happening is I do these things to allow me to reside in the power. Not that I'm getting the power. The big hurt is not what I thought. And so in that part, Chuck C's talking about what the big hurt is, and I remember Ralph called on me to share in the meeting, and I started sharing about one of my valleys in recovery, you know, and how I was able to, like, take God's hand and walk up the mountain thinking I just... You know, one of the things I love about my sponsor is he's not impressed with me at all. And so I'm sitting there, and Ralph just brings the thunder. And it was so engraved in my psyche that I could write it down after the meeting was over. That this whole thing is about being tethered. Everything we do. So like Mike, when you and I are talking about not being able to meet that newcomer, we're tethered to our mind. We're tethered to our thinking. And so now, if you think about it, guys, I was talking to someone about this earlier today. Was it you? I was talking about the atom bomb. Who was I talking the atom bomb to? So think about it. The greatest power man has ever been able to produce, right? The nuclear bomb. It came from a splitting of the tiniest particle that you can't even see. Think about the present moment. And how fleeting it really is. The minute you try to describe it, it's already passed. The present moment is where all the power is. The ego's entire, I think, existence is dependent on us destroying that little, small amount of, I don't even know if you can call it time. That's the only place we can access this power, tethered to it. And so when I can't meet a newcomer where he's at, when I'm bringing my mind to the game, you know, and I'm going to tell y'all something that's going to, like, I'm going to tell you a story of what happens to Tarek when he's untethered that happened to me this week. All right, so I have one stepson who's 14. His father overdosed and died 2 years ago. He's never had a relationship with his father. I've been his father for the past almost 6 years, okay? I've been the only father figure in his life. I've got a 10-year-old. Whose father has been in and out, burned his whole life to the ground, comes back from living in another country, and he's in the country for 2 weeks and hasn't even seen his son, right? What do you think this 10-year-old is going on in his mind? Something's wrong with me, right? He's not thinking I've got this great stepdad that's filled in for me, right? And so they have this thing called coffee and dads at his school. And the dad can't do it. And my 10-year-old says, I don't want to do it. And I'm sitting there going, no, I'll do it with you. I'll do it with you, right? And he says he doesn't want to do it. And all I'm thinking in this selfish and self-centered, no access to the present moment, untethered, knowledgeable, articulate, can talk about this stuff, but completely blind sometimes, is I'm thinking I've somehow lost something. Right. What I forget is that if I win, my 10-year-old loses. I shouldn't want to win in that situation. I should want to lose so he has his father there. But I don't think that way because of my default position is selfish and self-centered, that I must have this program in order to be tethered to the smallest possible thing that we have, the present moment. It goes by like that. That's the only place you can experience God. Nowhere else. You know, so I do think the spiritual way of life and this thing of like being of service to wake up someone else's spirit is phenomenal. And that what we're trying to do is get them to understand that like this is what it's about, trying to access the remembrance of God. I mean, Tarek didn't make up this language, guys. It's in our big book. It's on page 51 in our big book, to be exact. Some of the strongest language I've had I see it. You know, it says to show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness, the awareness, the attention of the presence of God is today the most important factor of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. Consciousness of the presence of God, Bill Wilson thought it was possible. Because I know somebody in here just heard me go on that whole spiel and they're like, that's not possible. If you believe it's not possible, it's not possible. But if you believe it is possible, it is possible. And that's what we're talking about here, real power. You know, in the St. Francis prayer, it says, God, make me an instrument of your peace, right? And then some of the versions, it says, make me a channel of thy peace. Guys, I'm going to sit here and tell you, this is how selfish and self-centered I am. This whole time, for the first like 15 or so years, you know how I interpreted that prayer? That I did this work to unclog the pipe so God could funnel all this stuff into me. I'd missed the whole thing of the prayer. The prayer is, I unclog the pipe and the stuff's already in me. Forgiveness is already in me, right? Bringing comfort to another person is already in me. Love is already in me, right? That's why we do the work. We clear away all this garbage that we have that's blocking us from bringing that to people's lives. And we can only do that with access to the present moment. And that's what this, I mean, I know your mind's convinced you that it's about drugs and alcohol. It's the greatest shell game on earth. We want you to think for a little while it's about drugs and alcohol. But then it's like a bait and switch, and then we're like, no. You know, selfishness and self-centeredness, man, that's your fucking problem, right? But it's on page 60. It's on what, page 62? What do you think would have happened if we put that on page 1? Would any of you have hung out? Yeah, open up page 1 and says selfishness and self-centeredness. No, we got to talk about alcohol and we got to talk about drugs for a while. But really, we're addressing the selfishness and self-centeredness so we can access that present moment where that's where the love is. And if we can remember God's presence, I wonder how that impacts our relationship with other people. Right? I wonder, like if I'm sitting here having a conversation with Jake, and this is a practice, and it's a very difficult practice, and I'm looking at your eyes, and I'm wondering to myself in the middle of the conversation, I wonder if that thing staring at me from behind your eyes is the same thing staring at you from behind my eyes. That is a really profound thing to think about. What if that's what God is? It's peering into its creation through all of us, but our damn minds are moving so fast that we can't see that. We can't even like begin to wrap our minds around. And the saddest part is we live in a world that doesn't allow us to. And that's why we get to do retreats like this. We get to sit around and have these conversations, right? We have an unfair advantage over the rest of humanity. We really do. You know, where else can you find a group of people and you meet a random stranger and you're like, oh, man, you know, you're talking about like New Orleans or something. Oh, I got my fourth DUI there. And you're like, damn, man, yeah, we connect on that, right? We start talking about all kinds of traumatic stuff that happened to us, and we just met. Where does that happen? Where do you have the ability to make relationships like that? Here. That's what's available here. And so much available here beyond your wildest imagination of what's available here. And that's our, I mean, that, as sponsors, this is our primary thing, man, is to like to point people to get the treasure map, follow the directions, take the hand of your sponsor, and then go find out what the treasure is. You know, you guys have been great tonight, by the way. You have caught everything. We're up here pitching, y'all are catching. I can feel it. You know, I can tell by the eyes, man. You know, I really appreciate you guys listening tonight. I hope you guys come back tomorrow, but I'll let Lindsay wrap us up.
Perfect. Thanks, Derek. That's so crazy. You keep talking about things, and I'm like, we talked about that earlier. Oh, my gosh. What in the Amazon forest is going on in Kentucky? There's so many. I was like, oh, my God. I mean, I'm from North Carolina. It's fine. I mean, we're all, you know, I mean, it's good. But I'm like, holy. Lots of bugs. So, and then I don't know if y'all, I honestly, Tarek was talking, I was like, I better look up the word tethered. Maybe I have no idea what this means. Because, y'all, 18 year, I'm not kidding. I thank God, first time I had a sponsor, and she was like, you know, we're going through the book, and she's like, you know, what's, I mean, I am no good example, but let's just say the word never. You know what never means? I'm like, yeah. So what's it mean? I'm like, never. But I had that answer for like every word. So I kind of have an operating system that's like, yeah, I know what that means. Come to find out, I don't know what a lot of stuff means. So I'm really grateful. So I was like, Tarek was talking. I was like, what if I don't know what tethered means? But just, you know, just so everybody knows, refer to the act of being fastened or confined. It says by rope, it be holding you. You tight. You tether. You together. So, you know, so you got something from the internet, it's an AI overview, and then you got the Lindsay version. You tight. Okay. So, which is crazy because this is, you know, we're just going to go back to the everyone's most joyous experience of life and sober living. Talk about being so wrapped up, and you know, here I am, y'all already know I was all desperate and all this kind of hoopla, and so I'm there, and I didn't tell this story till I had time sober because it was so embarrassing for me, but you know, I really wanted to stay sober. I'm like, you know, praying under the covers, oh, happy, joyous, and free. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of want to die, but yeah, like, we're good. Trying to do the thing. And, but at night, what I would do in the sober living, I didn't tell this to anybody, but I would sneak out in the living room, like, 3 a.m., because, like, what is sleep? Which, like, you're getting sober. It's like, either I'm sleeping all day or, like, none at all. It was weird. So here I am. I would go and sneak out. I'd go to this like little kitchen nook we had, and I'd get a little cup, and I'd pour apple juice in it, and I had this boom box, and I put on really depressing music, and I had a pack of smokes, and I would listen to this music, and I would sip on this apple juice, and I would just pretend it was liquid. I would just pretend, because I had no idea what was going on within me, because up until this point, just like at the very beginning when Carl was like, if you don't focus on what alcohol does for you, you're going to die drunk. It's in me, you know? So I've never been with me without something. Because that's what alcohol did for me, is it relieved me of the bondage of self. When I ask folks, like, you know, what did alcohol do for you? I mean, most common things is, like, relieve my anxiety, allow me to be comfortable in my own skin. I grew 10 feet. I could ask people out. I was better at my job at the beginning. And just like Bill Storing talks about the boomerang, the thing that set him free came back and chained him. So the thing that set me free came back and chained me. And here I am in sober living, not telling anybody that I'm doing this weird shit. like, you know, and I was like, just because, like, how weird would that be? You know, I was also young. I got sober at 21, so I was young, so there wasn't, you know, I don't want to be the weirdo, you know, who's like, oh, I'm drinking apple juice, you know, pretending that I'm going to drink. But it was hard. It was really hard. And I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea. And then, you know, of course, I got to have this, like, change. And, I love the sorting out process, because I'll tell some newcomers, I'll be like, y'all, you know, the choice, you know, it's like, I'm like, hey, you can choose. I got a pot of gold, or you get a pile of shit. Which one are you going to choose? They're like, the gold. And I'm like, ah, open it. And I'm like, it's the shit. And they're like, I didn't choose that. And I'm like, my whole life, you know, like, I mean, like, welcome. Like, even in Bill's story, if you ever read it, he's like, I rightly imagined. It's like, well, I never wrongly imagined anything. It, like, wrongly happened. So it's when the newcomer's like, oh, that ain't fair. I chose, you know, this. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, just like I have the exact same experience as Terry. I can tell you to the detail, like, because I had, you know, gone through the book, so I've looked at my experience, and it's scary that I'll wake up, and it's very clear. I mean, anybody have, I don't know, maybe, I had like a notebook. I don't know what I was doing when I was drinking, get high. It was like a journal. This is laughable. There's weird shit in there. One of the things, like, today's the last day, you know? Like, and it's like, I'm driving, you know, because I'm about to go do, you know, life. And then it's just like this little, that itch you can't scratch, that you don't even know is there. And that's the scary thing, is that, you know, I didn't know what I didn't know. You know, the alcohol, it's like, I don't know that I got something going on that I can't see, because I've only always had it. So even when I'm, like, trying to express to a newcomer, I'm like, yeah, you got shit you can't see. They're like, yeah, but I see it. I'm like, but you don't. You know? That's me. You know, I'm talking to myself, because I had no idea, because I'm driving and all is well, and then this little thing happens, and it's just like I'm pulling into the BP. Because at the time, those sparks just came out. Yeah. Oh, someone knew. Yeah, this is, that's my jam. You know, I'm trying to cut back on all things, but that was like the perfect medium in the morning. So, but like, it was like this lame alcoholic energy drink. It's never hurt me. Just like weed never hurt me either. But it didn't scratch the itch. You know, so, you know, here I'm at, it's harmless. So I choose, like, I'm making a decent choice. It's just never reality. It's just never reality. And that's the thing, even when someone's like, well, there's a possibility of prison. I'm like, yeah, but you ain't there yet. You know, like, whatever that is. So that's really, and it's so funny because, yeah, we were talking about Chris. There's, how does this look, too? Because I had about 8 years sober. And at that time, you know, I'm still doing my thing. You know, I'm going to meet, you know, I got my home group. I'm highly involved. I sponsor people. I take a meeting to, like, a really shitty sober living. But, you know, I was also on some crunchy shit, y'all. Like, I was kind of on some crunchy shit. Like, I'm like, you know, like, I'm just, like, doing a little, like, spicy date, and I don't know what I'm doing over there. Kind of slacking on my prayer meditation, my review shit. I'm kind of just, like, I ain't fully in the jam. You know, so I'm a little crunchy, and I was going through the steps with a good friend of mine, and this is so great. This is some crumb snatcher shit. So she's like, "We gotta do it. I gotta do a fifth step, right?" Well, I had only got my inventory done like 75%, and I'm pulling up in the parking lot where she lives. I'm like, "Shit, I better finish this." I ride it in the parking lot. I got 8 whole years sober. And then I go to her and I'm reading, but I'm really honest. I'm really honest and truthful about where I'm at. And she looked at me and she goes, "Oh, dang, you think you have a defense for suddenly." And Chris and I were talking about this, and it just like put a chill down my spine. I went, "Ooh." It hit me mostly because I believe in suddenly, because it's my experience. And I was like, you know, if I like hit you, if I suddenly hit you, you wouldn't see it coming because I like hit you. You know, if I just like hit Terry, like he'd be like, "Ow!" But something in me is like, but I'm gonna see it coming. And I have no experience with seeing it coming. I don't. I don't have any experience with it. But she disturbed me on my alcoholism, you know, and it did, you know, because there's only a few things, there's only two things that have ever relieved me of the bondage of self, and this is still true to this day. It's been alcohol or spiritual waking, psychic change. Those are the two things that have been able to relieve me from the bondage of self. And so having that experience of like, man, do I believe I'm up against suddenly? Like, I believe it. So I don't have any other experience with seeing it actually coming. But it's wild. That's what I'm up against. That's why my commitment and my dedication, and there's a part in Bill's story we talked about. Actually, I don't want to botch this either. I feel bad. I'm not a big, I'm not really that good at quoting out of the big book. You think so, but I'm not. Here it is. It says, there is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all because y'all have a blast. That's facts. I suppose some would be shocked at her seeming worldliness and levity, but just underneath there's a deadly earnestness. Faith has to work 24 hours a day and with us we perish. And what's really wild is I spent a lot of time taking things really serious. And I know a lot of serious people. I think we're really serious together for a while. We're probably really serious. Very serious. And what I found, if I just actually put a lot of like care, dedication, I actually just do this stuff, man, my life really ain't that deep. It's really not that serious. But a real big root of why, and I'm grateful for, is because I still believe I'm up against suddenly. And I also very much feel honored to participate and witnessing someone else wake up. It's like the dopest shit. Now I'm like, oh, yeah, what was I talking about? There's just stories, I guess. But I'll wrap it up like this. Regarding the first step, if you look in my experience, so looking at it, you mentioned this earlier, because there was a guy just the other day in my home group. We meet on Thursday nights, and a gentleman in there, it was great. This dude just like laid it all out there. You know, he was just like, I'm screwed. I've never really done this. I think y'all are full of crap, but here I am. Hope you're not. Help. And I was like, that's my dog. And it reminded me of like and I actually shared about it with, and I don't know who first said it, that I don't know, I heard it somewhere that it's, we don't accept the first step. It's when it becomes unacceptable. Something deeply becomes unacceptable, which that, you know, I didn't have a lot of language for that, but what was very true for me was hopelessness. When I really did experience some real hopelessness, hope showed up. Because there was nowhere else for it to be. It's the only thing left. I was like, oh, I'm hopeless. Whoop, there it is. Same thing.
Oh my God.
Same thing with powerlessness. When I first was surrendered and I really did like connect to that. When I really connected, like, oh my God, I'm going to choose gold and it's going to be dog shit for sure every time, you know, or oh my God, I have always drank again, period. Oh my God, like, you know, when I really started to connect to those things in my experience, when it was literally woven in this book and someone just helped me connect to it, that powerlessness, power showed up. Boom. It's the only thing left. Is that, you know, powerlessness, I promise you, power will show up more than you could ever look for it. And same with hope. And that is one of the neatest things that this kind of doesn't make any sense. Like, it doesn't make any sense that, you know, oh, now I'm connected to powerlessness. And now I have, like, now I can be directed. It's just the first time that maybe I just don't know everything. Maybe I just need help. Maybe I just need to ask. Maybe I need to do these things. And then that's what really propelled, in my experience, through a ton of help, being able to do things that made no sense, which is what Tarot read, which is, this is great. For practicing AA's remaining 11 step means the adoption of attitudes and actions that almost no alcoholic who is still drinking or getting sober. I added that in there. Can dream, and I was like, oh man, can dream of taking. Who wishes to be rigorously honest and tolerant, big hurt, who wants to confess his faults to another and make restitution, all of those things. Not only is it not in my, like, nature to do those things, if I didn't have someone show me that it was safe and okay to do those things, I wouldn't even know how or that it was possible to do those things. So when I got sober and they were like, well, you're selfish, I was like, that's crazy, because I'd share my fucking cookies with you and you can have a cigarette. You know, what's the problem? You know, that is crazy. Same thing with, like, honest. Like, of course, I'm being honest. I didn't even know. In fact, who said it? Yeah, your story about the microwave. You know, lying. I had no idea how to be truthful. I had no idea that you could share embarrassing things. I had no idea that it was okay to be me. I had no idea. And it was people in the rooms. It was my sponsor, home group members, friends, Tarek, who would just be that open and share all of their wounds, share all of their hurts, and it invited me and allowed me to share mine. I wouldn't even know how if someone didn't do it. So when someone's like, well, they just get honest, I'm like, they might not know how. I'm up against something that I really, it's tricky. So one of the most powerful things anyone can ever do that has ever happened in my life is to be truthful and show that it's okay to be truthful, to be courageous, to be scared, to be embarrassed, to be hurt, to be themselves. I don't know. I don't get much more spiritual than being honest and laughing a lot and helping people if you get it down to that. But being connected to that powerlessness is truly what opened up the realm of power. So I could connect to others in a service capacity, they could connect to me, but without any of that, man, I'm just too, I think I know shit, and I think I got it, and I got plans and designs. So I also want to thank, Chris and Steven, and also having lunch. I've really enjoyed meeting a lot of folks here, having a good time, and thank y'all for participating. Just having fun. I've had a blast. And thanks for being here. Thanks for letting me share.
Yep. Thank you.